Welcome to the Deep Dive. Ever stop to consider how a single, seemingly harmless phrase in a patent could lead to its complete downfall?
It happens more often than you'd think.
Today, we're plunging into the eye-opening case of Media Rights Technologies versus Capital One. And believe me, what we found is a powerful lesson for anyone dealing with intellectual property, or even just, you know, the challenge of explaining complex ideas clearly.
Absolutely. The fate of an entire anti-piracy patent, potentially worth millions, hinged on the interpretation, or maybe more accurately, the lack of clear meaning in everyday terms like compliance mechanism and custom media device.
Yeah, compliance mechanism. Sounds official, but what does it actually mean structurally?
Exactly. It really makes you think, doesn't it? How the devil, as they say, can be in the details, especially when those details involve the precise language used in legal documents like patents. This case highlights a fundamental principle in the realm of intellectual property, and honestly, beyond, clarity isn't just a nice to have, it's absolutely essential.
Exactly. So for this deep dive, you and I are going to dissect this legal battle. Our mission is to understand the crucial requirement of definiteness in patent law, specifically under Section 1B of the U.S. Patent Code.
Right.
Think of this as your shortcut to understanding a really pivotal aspect of patent law and its practical implications.
And to set the stage for you, back in 2013, Media Rights Technologies sued Capital One, claiming they were infringing on their anti-piracy patent, U.S. patent number 7,316,033. It's a scenario we see play out quite often, but the reasoning behind the eventual decision is what makes this case so instructive.
Right. And what's fascinating is how this unfolded in the courts. The Federal Circuit, which for anyone unfamiliar is the key appellate court for patent cases, ultimately sided with Capital One.
Yeah, they did.
They affirmed the invalidation of all 27 claims of the media rights patent. The reason? Indefiniteness. It wasn't about whether the anti-piracy idea was good or bad, but whether the patent described it clearly enough.
Which brings us to the core of what we want you to take away from this discussion. Our goal is to really unpack why these seemingly innocent phrases, compliance mechanism, and custom media device, led to such decisive outcome. And perhaps more importantly for you to understand what this case tells us about the nitty-gritty of patent law, especially when we're talking about software patents and how the Federal Circuit scrutinizes claim language.
Okay, so the patent ultimately failed due to its wording. Let's step back and see how this played out in the legal system. What was the initial stage of this case?
Well, the lawsuit was initially filed back in 2013 in the Eastern District of Virginia. Interestingly, this particular district is a pretty popular venue for patent litigation, often due to its perceived efficiency and experience with patent cases. They call it the Rocket Docket sometimes.
Good to know. So it started in a district court. And at that level, Capital One didn't even have to go through a full trial to win, did they?
That's right. Capital One took a strategic route and filed a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Essentially, they argued that even if all the facts as presented by Media Rights were true, the patent claims were so unclear and indefinite on their face that they couldn't be legally enforced.
Wow, okay.
And the district court agreed with this argument, found the claims indefinite right there.
So Media Rights obviously disagreed and decided to appeal that decision. They took it to the Federal Circuit. What happened there?
Well, as you mentioned, the Federal Circuit, after a thorough review of the appeal, ultimately affirmed the lower court's ruling.
They agreed.
The fact that both the district court and the Federal Circuit agreed that the patent was invalid due to indefiniteness really underscores the significance of this issue. It wasn't a close call in the end.
Absolutely. Two courts finding the same critical flaw. So let's dig into the patent itself. What was the core idea behind the 033 patent? What problem was it trying to solve?
At its core, the 033 patent was designed to tackle the problem of unauthorized recording of digital media. You know, piracy. The inventors proposed a system that would implement controls directly within the pathway where the media was being played back. Think of it as building a digital fence around movies or music to prevent illegal copying.
Okay, so how did Claim One, which you highlighted as a representative example, actually describe this inventive system? What were the key components it outlined?
Claim One described a system that included this compliance mechanism and a custom media device. The central idea was that when protected media content was being played, the compliance mechanism would activate. Its intended function was to essentially manipulate the data flow or control the output in a way that would frustrate or prevent unauthorized duplication. And the custom media device was envisioned as a secure playback device that would interact with this mechanism.
On the surface, that sounds like a reasonable enough description of an anti-piracy technology.
Yeah.
So what exactly was it about these terms compliance mechanism and custom media device that the courts found so problematic?
The fundamental flaw, and this is a key takeaway for you, was that the patent specification, the detailed written description of the invention, utterly failed to provide any real structural details about either of these critical elements.
No structure.
No structure. It described what they were supposed to do, the desired outcome, but it gave virtually no information on how they were actually designed, built, or how they functioned internally at a technical level.
That makes perfect sense.
Oh.
If you're claiming a novel invention, you need to describe it with enough precision so that someone who is knowledgeable in that technical field could actually understand it and potentially even recreate it.
Yeah.
It can't just be a vague idea.
Exactly. You need to enable someone skilled in the art, as they say. And this lack of concrete structural information is what ultimately led to the finding of indefiniteness under Section 12B.
Okay.
Now, this brings us to a really interesting area of patent law. The first legal hurdle revolved around this term, compliance mechanism. Even though the patent drafters didn't use the specific word means, the court still analyzed it through a particular lens.
Okay, let's unpack that. What's the significance of means plus function language in patent claims, and why did it become relevant here even without the word means being used?
Sure. Under U.S. patent law, specifically Section 112, which, as a bit of historical context, used to be the sixth paragraph of Section 12, if you describe an element of your invention as a means for performing a specific function.
Right, the classic phrasing.
Right, you're not limited to the exact physical structure or software code you described in the patent. Instead, your claim covers that structure and any equivalent structures that perform the same function. This can be a powerful way to get broader patent protection.
That's good.
However, there's a catch. If you do use means plus function language, you must disclose sufficient structure in the patent specification that corresponds to that claimed function.
Right. So you can't just claim a means for doing X without giving any hint as to how that X is actually accomplished. You need to show your work, essentially.
Precisely. Now, here's where the Williamson v. Citrix case comes into play. That case clarified that even if a patent claim doesn't use the magic word means, it can still be interpreted as a means plus function claim.
Oh, interesting. How?
Well, if the term used is essentially a substitute for means, like a nonce word or a generic placeholder, and describes the element primarily in terms of its function without providing sufficient structural detail.
So even without means, it can be treated like it.
Yes. There's a presumption against finding means plus function when means isn't used, but that presumption can be overcome if the term lacks structure and is purely functional.
How does a term that doesn't explicitly say means get treated that way by the courts? What are they looking for?
The courts look for terms that are essentially functional placeholders, words that describe what something does rather than what it is structurally. If a term lacks a reasonably clear structural meaning in the relevant technological field and is primarily defined by its function.
Like mechanism.
Potentially, yes. The court might say, okay, they didn't use the word means, but they're essentially claiming a something for performing this task without telling us what that something is.
And that's how compliance mechanism ended up being viewed in this case.
Exactly. The court looked at the term mechanism in the context of the patent and concluded that it was being used as a very generic, non-structural term.
Just a placeholder.
Pretty much. It was essentially saying something that achieves compliance without giving any concrete details about what that something actually was. Was it hardware? Software. A specific algorithm. The court felt it was functionally equivalent to saying means for complying.
Well,
for you listening, the crucial insight here isn't just about legal jargon. It's about the fundamental importance of clarity and specificity when you're trying to define something novel.
Right.
Whether you're writing a patent, a technical specification, or even just explaining a complex idea to a colleague, vague terms without concrete explanations will always lead to ambiguity and potential misunderstandings, just like it did here with compliance mechanism.
That's a really clear way to put it. So once the court determined that compliance mechanism should be treated as a means plus function term, what was the next step in their analysis? What did they look at next?
The next absolutely critical step was to examine the patent specification to see if it disclosed sufficient corresponding structure for that claimed function of the compliance mechanism.
The structure requirement again.
Exactly. Remember, with means plus function claims, the patent must describe the structure, material, or acts that perform the claimed function. If it doesn't, the claim is considered indefinite. End of story.
And where do software patents, like the one in this case, fit into this requirement of disclosing structure? What kind of detail are they expected to provide?
Well, for software-implemented inventions, like the anti-piracy system here, the patent specification typically needs to disclose an algorithm.
An algorithm, okay.
That's a specific set of steps, a detailed process, or a technical methodology that performs the claimed function. This could be presented in the form of actual computer code, flow charts illustrating the logical steps, or even a very detailed narrative description of the underlying technical process. The key is to provide a concrete roadmap of how the software achieves the desired outcome.
So not just saying a computer does it.
Definitely not. Think of it like this. If you describe a widget for holding things without saying if it's a shelf, a hook, or a basket, the court might say you're essentially just saying a means for holding things. You haven't given enough detail about the actual widget.
Right.
Similarly, for software, you need to explain the how, not just the what.
Okay, that makes sense. So in the case of the 033 patent and this compliance mechanism, what kind of structural detail did the patent specification actually provide? Did it have those algorithms or flowcharts you mentioned?
Unfortunately, no. It fell significantly short of those requirements. The patent specification for the 033 patent only described the intended function of the compliance mechanism.
Just the function.
Just the function. It stated that it would divert data, control data output, manage output paths, monitor, and stop media playback. But crucially, it utterly failed to explain how it accomplished any of these actions.
Uh-oh.
There was no algorithm disclosed, no snippets of code provided, no flowcharts illustrating the logical steps, and no specific hardware diagrams that would shed light on the structure of this mechanism. Yeah. It was all very high-level descriptions of what it was supposed to do without any explanation of the underlying technology.
So basically nothing concrete.
And nothing concrete at all. It's almost counterintuitive, isn't it? You'd think a word like mechanism would imply some structure, but in this legal context, it's read as almost the opposite, a lack of specific structure. That's a key nuance for understanding patent law.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
So it was essentially a black box described by its inputs and outputs, but with no visibility into the inner workings.
Exactly. It was like saying a device that makes coffee without explaining if it uses a filter, a percolator, or some other method. That fundamental lack of concrete structural disclosure for the compliance mechanism, which was deemed a means plus function term, is what ultimately led to the finding of indefiniteness under Section 12B.
And that took down the whole patent.
Yes, because this compliance mechanism was a key component in all 27 of the patent's claims, the entire patent was invalidated.
Wow. That's a pretty drastic outcome stemming from what might seem like a relatively minor issue of wording. So, what are the broader implications of this case? What should patent drafters, technology developers, and even those just interested in clear communication take away from Media Rights v. Capital One?
Well, for patent drafters, this case serves as a really stark and important cautionary tale. It emphatically highlights the inherent danger in using vague generic terms like mechanism or device in patent claims. Without diligently backing them up with very clear and detailed structural context within the patent specification. If your invention relies on software, simply making a broad reference to a general purpose computer is no longer sufficient and frankly hasn't been for quite some time.
Right, that ship has sailed.
Absolutely. You absolutely must be explicit in disclosing the underlying algorithms or the specific technical processes that enable your invention to function.
So more detail is generally better.
Generally, yes. More detail is better. Think code snippets, flowcharts, detailed descriptions of the logic. The more clarity you can provide about the how of your invention, particularly the underlying software logic, the significantly better your chances are of withstanding indefiniteness challenges down the line.
Makes sense.
This isn't just about avoiding legal trouble. It's about clearly defining the boundaries of your intellectual property.
So more concrete detail in the patent application itself is crucial. What about for those on the other side, for litigators defending against patent infringement claims? How does this case inform their strategies?
For litigators defending against patent infringement, Media Rights v. Capital One powerfully reinforces the notion that Section 112B be indefiniteness challenges can be an extremely effective tool.
A powerful weapon.
A very powerful weapon, particularly against patents that heavily rely on functional language without adequate structural support in the specification. Capital One's decisive victory here serves as a prime example of the very real risks that patent holders take when their claim language is too ambiguous or vague.
Yeah.
It clearly demonstrates that even seemingly innocuous terms can be rigorously scrutinized by the courts and can ultimately lead to the invalidation of an entire patent if they fail to meet the definiteness requirements.
So look closely at the spec.
Absolutely. So a careful and critical examination of the patent specification to identify any potential lack of structural detail for functionally described claim elements becomes a fundamental aspect of a strong defense strategy. Looking closely at the specification for structural details or the conspicuous absence thereof becomes an absolutely crucial part of patent litigation.
This has been incredibly insightful in understanding a seemingly technical legal point with really broad implications. To bring it all together, is there a key quote from the Federal Circuit's ruling in this case that really captures the essence of their decision?
Yes, the majority opinion in this case stated it very clearly and concisely. The specification fails to disclose an operative algorithm for performing the claimed functions.
Wow, straight to the point.
Very direct. That single sentence really gets to the heart of why the patent was ultimately found to be legally insufficient due to indefiniteness.
That's a powerful and succinct quote. It really hammers home the critical importance of providing that how, especially when dealing with software-related inventions. So the ultimate takeaway here seems to be that in the world of patent law, clarity isn't just a desirable attribute. It is an absolute necessity.
Absolutely.
A single, poorly defined term can have severe and far-reaching consequences, potentially nullifying years of innovation and rendering the entire patent effectively worthless.
Precisely. And it really makes you think about the delicate balance that patent law attempts to strike, doesn't it? How much detail is truly sufficient?
Mm.
How do we effectively protect genuine innovation while simultaneously ensuring that the public has a clear and unambiguous understanding of exactly what is being protected and what remains in the public domain? It's a fascinating tension.
That's a fantastic and really thought-provoking point to end on. How does the level of detail mandated in a patent specification truly reflect that ongoing effort to balance the need to safeguard innovation with the equally important need to ensure that the scope of an invention is clearly understood by the public? Definitely something for us to continue to consider. Thanks so much for diving deep into this with me today.
My pleasure. It's always illuminating to examine how these fundamental legal principles play out in the context of real-world cases and their impact on technology and innovation.